Hey, it is Azure Week, and I am Scott Hanselman, and I am here with my boss, Scott Hunter.
Yep.
We are collectively the Lesser Scots. If you can't get Guthrie, you get two of us. Kind of a two-for-one deal. I was sick on Monday, and I apologize for not being here on Monday. I went into the doctor, and he told me I had 104 fever. I said that's like, what, 313.5 Kelvin? I don't see why this is a big deal. The doctor did not think that was funny.
I would not even know what that is, other than that's like...
I just thought on a cosmic, you know, my temperature, it was a high temperature, but on a cosmic
level.
You're
trying to measure
your
temperature with the temperature of the sun or something like that, so...
And then my point was, cosmically, it was not a huge deal. they wanted me... So I canceled Monday. I'm here. We have a good distance between us so that Scott Hunter might not get sick.
Well, I was sick on Monday, too, so we can just blur the thing together, so...
There you go. So we're good. But we're here to talk about modern web applications. Now, the reason that we've got my boss here is that you own ASP.NET and Web Tools, right? And it's that and Web Tools that sometimes is a little bit confusing to people because they know about ASP.NET, the runtime, but then there's the tooling, the things that go into Visual Studio. It gets
right.
A little bit more complicated. And with the ASP.NET team over the last several years, things have gotten a little bit different. We're a lot more open, okay? There's less mystery. We are always sharing what we're doing.
There's pretty much no mystery anymore. So we went to a model about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, you and I on stage, actually, where we kind of took all of ASP.NET open source. And when we talk about that, I want to level set that as well. So that what that means is, if you want to see what we're working on next, you can just go to aspnetwebstack.codeplex.com. And if you're on aspnetwebstack.codeplex.com, you'll see a roadmap of the next product. You can see the bugs that people are filing against us publicly. And you can see the check-ins as from the team as they're live checked in. As we're developing every day, you can go, there's an RSS feed up there, and you can see the check-ins live. We do that across all the frameworks that we build. So we build ASP.NET, we build Entity Framework as well. You can do it for both of these things. And that's kind of the beginning of this transparency where everything that we do is public and live. But I also want to level set and say that one of the ways I like to explain this is our source code is open source. The product that I ship in Visual Studio is not open source at all.
So right. This is interesting. I always use the Chromium
model, exactly. If you install Google Chrome and you go to the About box, it says copyright Google. It's not an open source product. It's actually a commercial product.
Built off of an open source code
base. Built off an open source code base.
Exactly.
So in our open source world, the way it all works is, let's say we take public submissions, and we do take a lot of public submissions. In the last round that we're of product that we're shipping right now, two of the biggest features that shipped inside of MVC came from the community. Both the attribute routing came from the community, and the core support that we added, cross-origin support for WebAPI, came from community. So we took two huge community features in. If a community feature comes in, it's no different than a Microsoft developer writing it. They have to go look at our roadmap, make sure that what they want to do aligns with the direction we're taking the product, because we still shepherd the direction of our product. Mm-hmm. We'll code review the code just like we do any code from any developer inside of Microsoft. It has to meet our standards of unit testing, formatting, all those kinds of things, at which point we'll take it into the code base in the open source repository. You can get nightlies of that code if you want.
Right.
But then once or twice a year, we'll come through and we'll take a snapshot of that code, run it through all of our process inside of Microsoft, build it into Visual Studio or ship it in on NuGet.org. And that'll be Microsoft signed, Microsoft copyright, Microsoft EULA, Microsoft support across the board.
Absolutely. So let's take a look at our slide deck here. And
You should plug Azure Friday.
I don't want to push Azure Friday. If you go to friday.azure.com, it's a podcast, a video podcast, a show that I do. And you can check it out. It's at azure.com. You can go to friday.azure.com. And basically, it's 10 minutes on Azure every Friday by the people who made it. Basically, Hunter says, Scott, you need to go and learn Azure. And I said, it's too hard. And he says, well, you work for Microsoft. Maybe you can figure it out. And I go and find the people who built the thing. They sit with me and they teach me how it works.
But it's also more than that. You actually said that, you know, hey, if somebody messes up on an Azure Friday video, you actually leave it in there for the most part because you want to see people. That's the same mistake I might make if I'm trying to build an application as well. And so you want to show the recovery, which we all can learn from. Like, hey, if you happen to make the same mistake you saw there, because we all do.
Exactly. If someone makes a mistake on Azure Friday, it should not be a huge deal. And they might, you know, they're not really used to this style of doing things. They'll say, hey, Scott, can we do that take again? And I'm like, no, we cannot do that take again. I want to see you fix it because, it, you know, not every demo goes well. Let's figure this out. So check out Azure Friday. Now, we've talked about ASP.NET. That's the runtime, right? That's the inside of ASP.NET. I like to think of this as it's what on your disk that's at the time your app is running.
Right.
Okay. And we know that the father of ASP.NET, of course, is, you know, Scott Guthrie. You can see that I drew that on my Surface, feeling pretty excited about that. He's a great guy. Yeah. It's because they won't give me access to any good clip art. Now, on the other side of ASP.NET is web tools. And web tooling is, go ahead. Web tooling is the stuff that runs inside of Visual Studio that happens at like design time, right? The HTML5 editor, the CSS editor, the publishing experience. Everything from file new project.
Project system, JavaScript editor, all these things are part of the tooling that we have inside of Visual Studio.
And we point out that they're separate because they can be revved separately. Right?
Yes.
And like as an example, we'll look at our timeline. We revved in Visual Studio 2012, we revved it to include things like support for ASP.NET.
We're on one ASP.NET right now.
Yeah, I know. I can see it. I can't see it on this screen. This screen's not working. Now, in the past, I think that the ASP.NET kind of East Coast, West Coast, web forms, MVC kind of thing, the kind of, you know, it's kind of a rap battle, has been difficult because, you know, MVC came up and web forms people felt bad, and then web API happened, and it wasn't clear if you were supposed to pick a certain thing or, you know, you picked file new project, no matter what you picked, you were wrong.
I would challenge it was a landmine field. It was a disaster. If you chose one of these things, so I'll actually bring it up in Visual Studio here and show kind of what the old behavior was here. So I'm going to do file new project. And while I'm on file new project, I will select Visual Studio 2012, which shows the what we offered you before.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 options here. If I choose MVC 4, let's say you want to write a web API, you would have to choose MVC 4, which seems like an odd thing. And once you choose MVC 4, you get a bunch of other things that make not a lot of sense. You get this empty, basic, internet, intranet,
right,
mobile, web API.
And you'd have to just know that.
And you'd have to know what those things are. You'd have to know to click MVC to get to these things. And then once you chose one of these things, you actually kind of locked yourself into a particular path.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that if I chose MVC and then I decided later I wanted to add a web API, well, there was no trivial way to do that. And
right.
And if you did that, the tooling wouldn't light up. It was basically, we sent you down one path, and you were stuck. So let's fast forward to what we just shipped this time around. I'll go up to the web node here. And on the web node, you'll notice that I've just got one application type here, ASP.NET web application. Now, if I click that, I do get a few options still. Down from 20-something, I'm down to roughly 6. But there's a couple of differences in this new model here. First off, I can still select, hey, I want an empty application. I want to start with nothing, which we didn't really offer that before in a good way. I can select web forms, MVC, web API. What's different is, notice as I click MVC, I can come down here and click web API. So now I can choose multiple of these technologies at one time. I might decide, hey, I want to build an MVC app with web API, or I can come back over here and say I want a web form app, and I want to put some MVC in it and some web API in it. So I can select multiple frameworks. The idea here is, I'm not going to lead you down a path where you make a wrong choice and then have to go all the way back out to file new and start over again to do it again.
So you have a base template. And I experienced this. And one of the reasons that I thought when ASP.NET was a great idea, because before I worked at Microsoft, I worked in banking, and we needed to make hybrid applications. They were part web forms and part WCF and ASMX at the time. And every time I was hacking into the web config to make it work, I felt like I was in trouble.
Well, it was worse than that. If you actually remember, let's say you took a web form application. So a lot of our customers, might have an existing application, a web form application, and they decide they want to use one of the newer frameworks, MVC. So you would actually have to open up your project file and add a GUID mm-hmm. to your project file to make the MVC tooling come online.
Right, right.
So it was more than just, if you could figure out the web config and the references and all that kind of stuff, there were still a lot of landmines sitting in front of you there.
So from a technical perspective, what this means for people going forward is that there is no MVC project GUID anymore.
That's right.
There's an ASP.NET project type, period, full stop. There's one ASP.NET.
Exactly. That's what one ASP.NET really means, is there's one project GUID. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point out that even when I'm at this dialog box, let's say I chose MVC, and then afterwards I decided, your first inclination here might be just check them all. That yeah. way I'm safe, and in the future I'm good. You don't have to do that either. And we might even demo this. I can start with MVC, and then I can actually right-click on my project and say I want to add a Web API controller, because the tooling is no longer tied to that MVC GUID. And if I add that Web API controller, we'll go and add all the right NuGet packages to your application, and then we'll pop a screen up. We'll enable the tooling, and we'll pop a screen up that tells you what few steps you might have to manually do to actually make the two things work together. And that's a change.
Yeah.
Also looking at this, you notice that I don't have that intranet options anymore, which I don't think anybody other than the people on the team knew what those things were either. So authentication's been broken out as well. So if you look here, I've got this change authentication button here, and I can now choose, I don't want any authentication in my project at all, which was an option we had that was called maybe empty or basic in the previous
one. Yeah, when we had the whole, there was empty this, basic that. We want to make it so it is easy to pick and choose what you want and not use what you don't want.
Right.
And frankly, another really important point, and you know, you are my boss, so tell me if I'm saying this wrong, because I don't want to get in trouble, because I've been telling everybody this. But if you don't use a particular technology, we don't really care. We're not going to get paid more or less whether you use Web API or some third-party open source project. We want everyone to use what makes them happy, and we want to make ASP.NET an extensible kind of family of technologies that you can plug and play.
Exactly. If you want to use Web Forms and Service Stack together, go for it. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're using .NET and you're using Visual Studio and we're empowering you to build awesome apps with these tools and technologies, we're happy. It's not about pushing one of our particular frameworks. Mm-hmm. It's the whole ecosystem that we're trying to push.
So we're hoping to get that white area there with all the different base templates expanded to include other technologies, open source technologies, and other frameworks.
That's true. So we actually, this dialogue, even though it looks simple, it was a lot of work to let people actually select multiple frameworks and do all the right stuff and have our templates do all that. And when we shipped VS 2013, we didn't actually have enough time. I messed up, 2012. I didn't have enough time to get all that in so you could actually make this extensible. But the plan moving forward is we will make this dialog box extensible. And that means all of our third parties can go and add their frameworks directly to this dialog box as well. And so you could have Service Stack, you could have whoever.
Right Nancy here. FX,
Nancy.
Whatever. So you have actually what we call a Franken build, which is basically a daily build of some preview stuff that we'll talk about in April. But let's go back to the slides, and let's take a look at some of the timeline of what we've done in ASP.NET, and then we'll see if Scott will show us some previews of what will be coming out in several months. So we think that ASP.NET should include not just the family of technologies that you see there in green, but also you, your project, your company's project, your favorite open source project, whatever plugs in well to ASP.NET.
Right, the U could be third-party frameworks, it could be anything. So
exactly.
It's basically one stack that runs on top of .NET.
Right, and we'll dig more into that later today as we hear about some of the new features. Now, we did great stuff in September of 2012 with the initial release of 4.5, but I think what really was interesting was the .2 releases, the .1 release, this idea that the internet moves at a different speed than Visual Studio, which is rather a bit faster. So ASP.NET revs a little bit different. But remember that slide at the beginning where we talked about web tools and ASP.NET. We don't want to change the core essence of ASP.NET every 3 to 4 months. That'd be insane, right? But we can change the tooling to be better, to support new JavaScript frameworks, to support new innovations in CSS, to support new ideas, maybe via a NuGet package.
Exactly. So I think there's something we should clarify is historically we first started doing what we call out-of-band frameworks. That's what MVC, Web API, SignalR, Entity Framework, or out-of-band frameworks. We took our core frameworks and moved them out of the .NET framework so we could ship faster than .NET.
Right.
We've also done the same thing with tooling. So tooling is now something that we kind of pulled out of Visual Studio. When you buy Visual Studio or download Visual Studio, we have chained our tooling in, but we can also rev it out of band as well.
Yes.
We have three kind of trains that we ship stuff on. One is we ship everything with a Visual Studio release. That's a place to get all of our stuff, the latest round or set of everything. The next round that we have is we have these updates to Visual Studio, which you see here is 2012.2.
Right, that's where we added like the less editor and a number of improvements on the web tooling side.
Tons of improvements came in that .2 release. And that's something that you get through Visual Studio. The auto update mechanism inside of Visual Studio will let you get that. But there's even a third mechanism that we have as well, which is sometimes we'll release updates to our NuGet packages for our frameworks even faster than this. And if we want to, if there's a point in time that a Visual Studio update's not in the pipeline and we need to get some code out there, I can also ship a version of the tooling for Visual Studio standalone as well. For a customer, the way I like to look at it is, if you're the corporate customer that wants to stay just on the main track, you can just stay with the, you know, every time we release a version of Visual Studio and use the bits that come with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a little faster than that, these Visual Studio updates happen every couple of months. You can grab one of those, and you'll be a little faster than that. If you want to be more bleeding edge, you're really the alpha developer, then you can actually go out and grab the NuGets off of NuGet.org for our technologies. And if you're the bleeding edge developer and want to be right at the thin edge of what we're doing, you can go to our CodePlex sites and grab nightly builds that are coming right off our thing. So we offer a wide swatch of choices on how fast you want to get the newest stuff we're doing at. But I think on average, for the bigger releases, it's about every 6 months. And we've been doing that for a couple of years now. We're about 2 or 3 years into that.
Right. The goal being to be able to support people who are doing really, really interesting new technologies in 2014. But there's also legacy apps. You can go into Visual Studio and open a .NET 2 app today, and it'll work.
And that's something we're also building better support into Visual Studio as well for, is being able to use our older technologies. So one of the benefits of this removing of the project GUI that we talked about for one ASP.NET,
right,
it means that when we get to the next version of VS that we're shipping in the future, older versions of our frameworks will still work with it because the tooling's no longer tied to these GUIs and the bits that shipped in that version of Visual Studio.
Right. So let's see our next slide. Now, with 2013 came out, and you are going to have still these kind of, not quarterly, but, you know, periodic updates, seasonal updates. And we've got this one coming out called 2013.2.
Right.
And you've got a Franken build of that because we're currently working on that right now. And you'll show us some of those bits right now. Now, here's the thing, though. The internet moves fast, and we don't know, really, what will the internet be doing in December. We have a general sense, in broad strokes, what we'd like to do, because roadmaps get less and less specific the farther and far out. Like, I know what I'd like to see happen in 2 years, but, you know, 2 years ago was a whole other internet.
I would say our roadmap is probably good for 6 months we could share publicly. Anything beyond that is a total blur, because if some new technology pops up that's popular, we're going to make sure it's supported inside of Visual Studio and inside of ASP.NET, you know, immediately. That's historically, if you look at ASP.NET, that's what's happened. You know, we started off with web forms. We were trying to bring desktop developers to .NET, to web. Then we saw Ruby come out and become popular for building these MVC-style web applications, and we React and make an MVC framework.
Right.
Then devices, tablets, and phones started being popular. How do you service those? Recruited Web API. And then once you had those same kind of devices, the next thing you saw was, man, I have this app running and I want to see updates in real time. And so we build a real-time framework. So I think, as you said, we're always looking at what the next thing will be.
But at the same time, for people who are planning for the future, for companies who are thinking about what's the next year or two mean for the web and for ASP.NET, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, that you're going to see less big prescriptive frameworks from us and more smaller enabling technologies. Like, rather than throwing ASP.NET out and saying SignalR is the only way to write applications, you saw SignalR as a fully fledged member of the ASP.NET family of things.
Right.
You're seeing the rise of Angular and Ember and Backbone and Underscore and pick a noun .js. Should ASP.NET pick one and knight it and risk being wrong if the internet decides that that one is unworthy? Not every framework is going to be like jQuery and then win. Instead, we want to support these technologies, the grunts, the bowers, the embers, the angulars, and support those technologies in ASP.NET in a way that feels natural.
Right. One of the things, if you're not using ASP.NET, if you're coming from like that JavaScript world, if you're writing lots of client-side JavaScript applications, there's a variety of different tools that are available to those customers. They use a tool called Grunt that runs JavaScript tasks in the background for you. That'll do kind of your build steps kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a library called Bower that you use to inject JavaScript libraries into your application. A little differently than the way we do with things with NuGet. NuGet is really optimized for putting, you know, DLLs into your application and wiring them up, mm-hmm. while Bower is much more involved with not only putting a script in your application, but actually potentially wiring it up if you're using something like Yeoman. I actually call that modern web is, I think, the terminology we've been calling that. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the areas of focus that we're going to focus on with Visual Studio moving forward. I know you're going to talk to Mads later today, and he's going to talk about what we're doing there. I do think that we will offer a prescriptive stack sometime in the next year or so for customers. One of the things that I hear all the time is we've been using this mantra in our team for the last year or so, which is, hey, if it's Ember, if it's Knockout, if it's Angular, guess what? You know, if it's Bootstrap, we'll have great support in Visual Studio for these things. But there are some customers that would like to have us actually point them down a given path. And so we will look at what's the most popular of those and potentially take a bet. But I'll be honest with you, if you do that, we're not ever going to lock you down a particular path. So let's say we went down the Angular path and we said that, hey, file new, we're going to have a modern web app as in that dialog box, and one of those is based on Angular.
Right.
If you wanted to go build an app with Knockout, we're not going to prevent you from building an app with Knockout. In fact, whatever tooling we do, if we do tooling for something like an Angular, I would hope that we would open that tooling up so the Knockout guys could come in and plug their tooling in and take advantage of the same kind of functionality that we would enable for Angular. We might not be as a team be able to afford to do, you know, Knockout, Angular, Ember, but if we do one and make the hooks available so the other guys could actually write their tooling and inject their tooling into VS the same way we do one, that's really the way we'd like to see that move.
And I think that we're also looking at new ways to make using your favorite template easier.
Right.
We've been brainstorming. We were talking yesterday. Why not be able to go file new project, ASP.NET, and clone from a Git repo as a template,
which gets you the latest version of whatever template you're pulling.
So there's a favorite community member who has a template. Why can't that come out of Git? So those are the things. And if you think those ideas are great, then tweet us, talk to us,
email us,
and we'll take a look. So the modern web release that we'll see possibly later this year,
or we'll preview, I would say, later this year.
Right now is going to blow your mind. That's pretty much the animated GIF that is the code name for the thing. Now, going farther beyond that, into the holiday season and into next year, we have some ideas. We think that they're going to be amazing, but right now there's no official code names that we can announce. So
even before I show the animated GIF for the next thing, I'll show the animated GIF first.
So what we're going to call that one right now is Tiny Saddam Hussein Taxi Transformer Boy. So that is the official ASP.NET code name.
It's going to be so cool that you watch this and you're like, can we build a product that cool?
So, can we do that as many times as possible? So what were you going to add?
So what I was going to say is, you know, I think the short-term focus, as we said, is going to be modern web. But something else that's really important to us and that we want to go focus on as we're moving forward is, what pain points do ASP.NET developers fall face today? One of the common pain points that I think people face today is, we ship a new version of Visual Studio. We just shipped one in October. How long does it take your company to be able to actually use that version of Visual Studio? Right. That typically has a long lead because the .NET framework is a big component. It's an operating system component. It sits on your machine. And if I go make changes to that component, it potentially could break any app on your machine because it's a global install thing. And so something we want to look into in the future is, what if we actually ship the framework as part of your application? meaning you had the ultimate in side-by-side. You no longer had the risk of, you know, I could use the latest frameworks in Microsoft today in my enterprise and know that doing that, nothing's going to break anywhere. Everything's going to work great. And so that's an area that we want to focus on.
Right. Similar to a node, the idea that you, with the expense of disk space, you're going to have a lot more control.
Exactly. Way more control. I mean, other areas that along that same line that are interesting to us are application startup. Today, application startup in ASP.NET it's okay. It's not great. Once your app is booted up, we're really fast. We have tons of benchmarks that let us know that we're really fast, but we'd like to get that application startup faster. Mm-hmm. And even more so, developer productivity. A super critical thing to me is how fast can you as a developer write code? Today, we're kind of clunky. You know, let's say you're building a web API app. You make a change, you do a build step in Visual Studio, and then you refresh your browser. What if I could push all that away and go back to more of a model like Node or Ruby or PHP, where just save the source code file, and as you save the source code file, you can just refresh the browser. So those are areas that we really want to investigate, is getting that side-by-side really nailed so nobody ever complains to us and goes, I can't use the newest thing right away, or mm-hmm. I'm afraid it's going to break my machine. And how can we make you as a developer faster? When you talk to Mads later today, and you show browser link, that to me is about making the developer faster as well.
Which brings us to a really good transition if you take a look at the slides, that you talked about the different ways that we ship stuff. You mentioned three things, thinking yeah. about Visual Studio itself, the quarterly updates, and then the NuGet packages. But there's kind of a fourth way, which is a little bit of a shadow government, and this is this idea of like ASP.NET Labs.
Right.
With Mads Christensen and team's Web Essentials, VS Web Essentials. This idea is that web tools and that original slide all the way back at the beginning of this session, we talked about the runtime, that's your NuGet packages, and then the tooling. What Mads and team have here is the ability to do crazy stuff. Just like if you think about Gmail Labs, if you go into your account and you say, that's a crazy feature, I'm going to try that, you know? They'll probably never make that real, but let's try it. Anything interesting that they can think of, the Less editor actually came out of Web Essentials. And he's revving this as often as a couple times a month.
Every couple of weeks, yeah. So it's also interesting that Mads works on the team that builds the editors for our web project system. So the HTML editor, the JavaScript editor, the CSS editor. The cool thing is, as Mads has been working on Web Essentials, he's been opening up our editor. So we just, as part of VS 2013, we just shipped a brand new HTML editor for ASP.NET projects. Mm-hmm. And while we didn't add a ton of functionality in VS 2013 in the editor, I mean, there is some new functionality there, definitely. What we really opened up was the extensibility to allow a product like Web Essentials to come in and plug in and add a bunch of stuff on top. So for the first time ever, the HTML editor is fully extensible via a third-party plugin, which allows Mads to take something like Web Essentials and do some crazy stuff that you're going to see later today.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is another way for you to be on the cutting edge. And what's great about the fact that it's done as a Visual Studio extension is that if it crashes, you disable it and you move on.
Right.
But when cool features come through Web Essentials and we hear from the community that everyone's really interested, and by the way, Web Essentials is open source, so you can get involved, we'll graduate those features into maybe a quarterly release and then a final release of Visual Studio. So that's really, really cool stuff. So we can talk a little bit about some of the features, but at the same time, I do want to see some of your Franken build stuff. So maybe give us an overview of which releases and what.
The nice thing about looking at this stuff is a lot of the stuff that we see on this slide, you're going to talk to people about today. So we have a brand new identity system built into ASP.NET projects. And where that comes from is we added the membership system to ASP.NET in the .2 timeframe, which rolls back to, I think, around 2005. And since then, a lot of things have changed. There's a lot of assumptions made about identity back then that have changed. Well, you know, there's now these claims-based authentication that everybody likes to use, the idea of having social providers where you can log in with Twitter, Facebook, Google, whatever,
right.
Microsoft, OAuth. A bunch of new concepts have come in, and so that we've built a brand new identity system that tries to embrace those things. As we talked about, emerging web standards, Bootstrap, all of our templates are now based on Bootstrap. So I like to think of Bootstrap as I'm not good at CSS, and Bootstrap allows me to write pages that don't look bad. And so Bootstrap's awesome for that, those kind of things. We've already talked about one ASP.NET. We've talked about scaffolding. We've talked about authentication. Across MVC, we talked about it took two huge community contributions. One was attribute routing, which is a feature I love. Attribute routing is if you're writing a controller in MVC or Web API, you used to have to go and create this complicated route table that is hard to modify, in my opinion. And the idea behind attribute routing is you can just take your controller action methods and put attributes on them saying, I want this one to have a URL foo, this one to have a URL bar, this one to have a URL Hanselman, and I'm good. And so I think it makes that much more approachable. Entity Framework is one of the favorite areas that we've done some work on in this time frame. Is first off, we added async support. So one thing I would say, I don't know if you're talking about this with anybody today.
We have Rowan here, actually the head of Entity Framework, to talk about all that stuff.
If you're using ASP.NET, you should be using the await operator anytime that you talk to a disk, anytime you talk to a network. And so now with EF, you can use the await keyword and make this happen. One of my favorite demos that we have on this, and I have no idea if you'll see it today, is let's say you have an ASP.NET app with a static page that makes no database calls and an ASP.NET page that calls the database. What do you think would happen if I hit both pages really, really hard?
Well, I mean, if I assume that the static one is not related to the database one.
Not true.
Okay.
So the data, that's why you should be using async anytime you're doing a database operation, a network operation. We have a benchmark that shows what will actually happen is each time the page that's making a database call is being executed, it's basically holding a thread in the ASP.NET thread pool the entire time it's waiting for that operation to happen. So if you hit that page a whole bunch of times, you basically consume all the threads in the thread pool, and there's nothing left to serve the static page. And that's why, you know, so that one database page can affect your entire application's performance, unbeknownst to you.
By starving the thread pool.
By using await, anytime you use EF, you're not starving anymore. The static page never loses performance as your other page is actually running and making database calls.
Very cool. We'll go over that with Rowan.
So I would go over that. We added support for stored procs and EF code first. We'll actually, via a migration, we'll write the stored proc for you. And then as we get in the world of cloud and we have your database living further away from you, we need the ability to actually do a retry in case the network connection, you know, burbles at all. As we mentioned earlier, we've got a new HTML editor. Mads is going to come on and show the browser link stuff, which I think really enhances developer productivity. Mm-hmm. And we keep adding more support for frameworks. AngularJS was added, and Bootstrap was added to Visual Studio Intelligence as well in this time frame. And now we're moving forward to the April-ish time frame, the build time frame, where we hope to have a refresh of our tools again.
Okay, and that's what we're all kind of frantically working on right now.
Yes.
This kind of spring build release. Right now, do we know that the name will be 2013.2. Okay. And is this going to be one of those changes of, it's going to change ASP.NET in the GAC, or are these NuGet packages and tooling changes?
So there is no new .NET framework in this release. .NET 4.5.1, which we just shipped in October, will remain the same .NET framework. But there are updates to our bin deployable features. So things like Web API, MVC, EF will all take a update in this round. But these are opt-in. So, I mean, if you create a file new project with a .2 update, you'll get those by default. If you have an existing Visual Studio 2013 project, you would have to go to the NuGet Package Manager dialog box and opt yourself in to one of these new things. So we're not going to like change your box or break your apps.
Right. So this is a hint of an example of what the new kind of world is, right? We want to be able to have a great new update to ASP.NET, but if you're in the middle of working on something, you don't want this great new update to break what you're currently working on. And this is where that packages.config and being aware of what's going on in your NuGet packages.config is so important.
Right.
Know the versions that you're going to ship. And then when we rev a version, make sure that when you go file a new project, you're going to get the newest stuff. You might want to go into your packages config or into the NuGet dialog box and make sure that you got what you wanted.
Right. That's the nice thing. We're not, you know, any of your existing projects will work just as is. A bunch of other cool things are coming as well. So, you know, we talked about scaffolding. Scaffolding is extensible in this update.
Okay, we finally got there.
Meaning that any other company could go, any of our companies that make components for ASP.NET could come in and have a gesture control that says, add their thing to your project, and it would happen. We're going to use that exact functionality to add WebForm scaffolding. That was something we couldn't get in the box in October, and so we'll be able to actually ship that as a component you can add to Visual Studio and get the same scaffolding we have for Web API and MVC for WebForms.
So early on, Steve Sanderson and I and David Ebo had a kind of PowerShell-based command line scaffolding system.
Sure did.
But it wasn't exactly friendly. It was difficult, and not as many custom scaffolders got created as I thought should have been created. How is this scaffolding system going to be better? And how does it relate to the one ASP.NET concept?
So the scaffolding ended up being way harder to write than we thought it was going to be to write. When we first started working on it, which is like December of 2012, we thought, oh, yeah, by March or April, we'll have a brand new scaffolding system. It's going to be awesome. And then right around the time we start getting ready to lock down Visual Studio 2013, we're still struggling to finish scaffolding. And the way I like to describe that is, if you think of the scaffolding you guys wrote, I would actually say it targets more the alpha guy, which means, hey, if you run it and it breaks your app, great. The scaffolding that we wrote inside of Visual Studio tries to be very resilient. So if you do, like, I want to add a Web API controller, and our scaffolding is going to go look and say, do you have the right folders for Web API? Do you have the right files in all those folders to give you the default experience?
Right. Do you have the Web API, right? It's trying to be a one ASP.NET.
But it's
brand.
Checking all these things. It's checking to see, hey, do you have the assemblies? Hey, do you have the folder? If you have the folder, is there already a file in the folder that we're going to put there?
Right.
And so it's checking a lot more things than I think the scaffolding that you guys wrote.
Well, because ours was basically PowerShell scripts and dreams.
And ours also will actually try to go backwards. If it tries to go down a path and realizes that it can't complete for some reason, it will back up and not leave your project in a bent state where it doesn't work anymore. And so it ended up being a harder problem than we thought it would be. So, and then identity. We're doing even cooler stuff with identity. With all the security breaches and stuff you see around the internet today, we're adding support for two-factor auth in our applications. So Pranav's going to come on later and show you how easy it is to add two-factor auth to any ASP.NET application. In MVC and Web API, you'll see we got a variety of things. We have binary JSON. We've got better attribute routing. One of the things that I'm really excited about here is you notice it says helper fixes for dropdowns and enums. The dropdown helpers we've had in MVC have been not very good for a couple of years. Those are finally fixed. Enums, when we scaffold out your application, we now scaffold those out correctly. I don't call out here, better bootstrap scaffolding. I think you might have run into this before. If you actually scaffold an application, we don't actually put the right bootstrap stuff in a few places. It was a bug that sneaked into 2013. That's taken care of. More exciting stuff is Entity Framework. We've been pushing this model in EF for a while where you write your code first instead of actually going to some database designer or starting with an existing database. Today we have like a Power Tools feature that you can actually add to go from a database to code first. That's now going to be a production feature. So you'll be able to actually take your existing database, right-click on it, and say, generate me EF code first classes for that database, and we'll go and write those for you. So it's going to make it much easier to move in and out of writing EF code. God, there's one more EF thing I wanted to chat about, but
let's see your Frankenbuild.
Frankenbuild. Let's do Frankenbuild. So what I'm going to show here is another thing that we want to do is I think you've heard this, Scott. I think we talked about this last night. So Microsoft's got this Azure. We have a cloud. But don't you still talk to a bunch of customers that don't even know that we have a cloud?
I've talked to people who don't know that we have a cloud at all.
So we want to make the cloud more visible. And we also want to enable you to do some cool stuff with your projects. So I'm in the one ASP.NET right here. I'm going to click and select this. And you're going to notice this is a preview of what we're going to ship in the build time frame. Now I have the ability, right when I'm creating a new project, to say that I want to create a website in the cloud. I just check this box here. And by checking the box, When I create my project, we will also create you a dev test environment in the cloud. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. There's also a more options there. I could have dropped down, and it would let me actually choose which region I'm in, let me create a database. All that can be done in one click. So that...
If I'm running Azure Pack or an alternative cloud, a cloud inside my company, will I be able to plug into that?
I don't know if in the build time frame we'll actually be able to do that, but the plan is long term, yes. You should be able to plug into any place that we have the Azure artifacts. It should just be a one-click, one-stop operation.
Awesome.
So I've actually just done a file new, and I have this overall status here that basically says that my website is actually live in the cloud, and there's a button right here that says publish. I click the one button. The publishing dialog's been already filled out. If I click publish, I'm up, it's publishing.
So once I'm signed in, you didn't have to do any downloading of published profiles and all that?
Didn't have to do any, it was basically one click. It was the same one click operation. I had to click one checkbox in my final new project, mm-hmm. and then 15 or 20 seconds later, I've got an app running in Azure. Azure's awesome because we give you 10 of these sites for free, so it's a great place to have a dev kind of sandbox to try stuff and try it in a real live hosting environment.
Well, I learned a couple of days ago, it's actually 10 sites for free per region.
Which means, yeah, I mean, we have a lot
of
regions.
So I put a bunch of sites in Western Europe I didn't even know I had.
So I want to show some other cool stuff in the Azure from the Azure side that I think that's kind of cool to look at. So I've got my app in the cloud, and I don't know if it's happened to you, Scott, but I put my first app in the cloud, and I ran into an issue where it wasn't running correctly. And I'm like, how do I debug that?
Yeah, when it works locally but doesn't work in production, it's pretty frustrating.
Pretty frustrating. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually republish my site. I'm going to right-click on Publish. And I'm going to come up here and select Settings. And instead of publishing my release build, I'm going to publish a debug build. This is an area that we'd like to improve on in the future as well. I'd love not to have release and debug builds. If my app's not running right, I don't think I want to publish it again to go figure out why it's not running right. I think I want to have the ability just to actually do that directly in the cloud. Hmm. So now my app's in the cloud. Well, what if I wanted to debug it? So let's mess around here. Let's load up my controller. And I'll select my about action method. And I'm going to stick a breakpoint in here. So I've got a breakpoint on there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to open up the Azure node here, go to websites, and you'll note that my websites are here. Here's my website, web application 34, sitting right there. I can right-click on that now, and I can say attach debugger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the first time I do this, what's going to happen is we're going to go out to the cloud, tell the cloud to install the right mechanisms on my application to enable remote debugging. So we have the Visual Studio remote debugger up in the cloud. And then we have some other magic around that as well. We want to make sure this is secure. So this is a pretty cool feature in that I'm in shared hosting, which means there's other apps on the box.
Right.
But all the stuff we built in here allows me to debug only my particular application on that box. So I can't touch your applications or anybody else's applications.
Right. So the same kind of security sandbox, it keeps my runtime site separate. It's going to keep that debug session separate as well.
Exactly. So it's up there. It's running. First time you do it, it's about 20, 30 seconds. The next time, there is no delay because we've actually already enabled the stuff there. I click the about in my app, and you'll notice that I have a breakpoint fired right here. Actually, I didn't click it. Somebody on the public feed saw my URL.
You think that's what happened?
Yes, it's exactly what happened.
You haven't visited. I didn't see you visit the site yet.
Here's the page. I've not hit this, and you can see that I have a live breakpoint running in the cloud right here. So
that's awesome. That's so funny.
So that's pretty cool. But it gets better than that. Let's say I stop debugging this, and let's go and add system.diagnostics here. And then
I always tell people, I say, do you remember system.diagnostics.trace that we learned about 12 years ago, and we should have been using all this time and instrumenting all of our code everywhere? Trace was a great class, one of the best parts of the BCL, the base class library, the ability to have trace writers and alternative locations for those tracings to go. So rarely do I see people using trace and diagnostics well and appropriately but we've got really great support for that in Azure.
So let's build this. So I just added, I just took my application and I added a trace warning to my application.
Mm-hmm.
And let me republish this because I made a change in the code. Publishing is really, really fast.
Because it's an incremental publish now.
Exactly. But how would I actually view that trace? And I'm going to show a preview of a new way to view the trace. I'm going to show the current cool way to view the trace. I'm going to right-click on my application again. I'm going to go View Settings. And I have this application logging down here, which I can turn to on. Or we did a trace warning, I believe. So I'll turn warning on.
So you're making a change in the portal without going to the portal.
Exactly. That's the cool thing. Is so far, we've created a website in Azure. We've enabled debugging in the website in Azure. I'm now enabling tracing in Azure, and I'm not going to the portal.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, there's things you need the portal for, but this kind of stuff, you know, launching another website, logging in is more than I actually need. So I'm going to make a change here. I just saved my change, and now I'm going to right-click on my application again, and I'm going to say View Streaming Logs. And once again, now you can see people in the cloud are hitting it. It's scrolling in the window here.
I love our audience. Thank you, guys.
So that's tracing in the cloud. Now, what's cool is I have another preview feature here as well, which is sometimes I've been in states where I don't actually know what of my code is in the cloud. So I published some stuff. I've got some stuff up there. I'm not sure what's in the cloud. How do you actually do that today? Today, what you would do is you might go to the portal, enable FTP access for your website, and FTP to your website and see the actual files that are there.
Sure.
I'm going to just drill into my website right here. And you'll notice that I now can drill into files, and even cooler, I can drill into log files.
So hang on. So this is coming in the build time frame.
Yes.
And you're using the Server Explorer now as a file explorer to look at the live files on disk.
On disk.
In Azure.
Now, where this might be interesting is I'm showing this streaming tracing right here.
Right.
Well, what if I'm not looking at this for an hour? Or
yeah,
two?
Yeah.
What if I want to look at the log?
Well, you got to really analyze the log.
I can now open up the application node. And I can just double-click a log file in here, and you'll see I've got all the traces that are coming in historically with full date timestamps of the logs. So I can now just plug in, drill into my application. If maybe my application's not running correctly, I'm not sure that my web config transform has done what I want to my web config.
Yep.
Well, I can just drill right in and look at my web config. So you can now just browse live. What's going on? Now, if I save this, I can actually even edit and save this if I wanted to.
Yeah, for development purposes.
For development purposes. But you really don't want to do that other than maybe for development purposes, because then you're kind of out of sync with what's in your solution.
Right, and when you publish, it's going to get overwritten.
Yeah. You can actually right-click in the Solution Explorer and actually decide if you want to pull the one from the cloud or vice versa. But I think the main part of this is looking at logs and looking to see if your publish actually put up there what you expected it to put up there.
Right, right. And this really underscores instrument your code. I mean, I always tease people when I talk about this feature. Like, we learned about this 12 years ago, and it was a great feature then. I remember instrumenting my .NET 1 and .NET 2 applications, and even putting diagnostics.trace in DLLs that are in process, that are not ASP.NET DLLs.
Tracing drives me nuts. So if you look at ASP.NET historically, We've just been all over the road with this thing. So web forms had this trace.axd.
Mm-hmm.
It's a special URL you can hit,
right,
that shows you some tracing information in ASP.NET. MVC has nothing.
Right.
You have to go do it all yourself.
Web API has great tracing, but it's hidden. You have to turn on a switch, and then it comes out of the deep diagnostics.
Web API's got awesome tracing that we added in the .2 release of 2012.
Yep.
And the tracing in Web API is spectacular. It's
pretty amazing.
It will show you a request came in, the routing mechanism looked at that request and figured out this route, it's going to run this route. Then based on this route, we're going to find this controller, and then we're going to show you what parameters are actually passed to the method in the controller. So one of the things as we look into the future that I want to clean up in the product is I want to make tracing be the same across all of our frameworks.
Right. So awesome tracing, Web API quality tracing.
SignalR, MVC, Web API, Web Forms, same tracing everywhere.
And then presumably be able to see it in Azure, to be able to see it in third-party tools like Glimpse or Elma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for spending the first hour with us. We've got a lot of great content all day long here on Azure Week. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll come back and learn about how to upgrade existing websites. And big thanks to Scott Hunter.